You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good,
The AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California. Presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Hey guys, and welcome to the Game of Thrones After Show. And this is a great week. So for all of our Christian listeners out there, happy Easter. For all of our Jewish listeners out there, happy Passover.
Happy Game of Thrones.
Yeah, everyone else happy. And for everyone in that group, happy Game of Thrones. Joining me tonight, the lovely Kristen Snyder.
Hello. Happy to be here.
Happy to shift over the water for those watching. And the lovely Sarah Stretton.
Sundays are such a happy day. Sunday nights.
As soon as the show ended, she was like, so why isn't there another hour?
I was like wanting more. I don't know if it's just because I get so sucked in and it's not that the episode wasn't good. I needed more. I wanted more payoff. It was such a like climax. And then I was like, wait, come back. No titles, no previews. Just give me more episodes.
You know what I want more of? I want more holidays in King's Landing. Like, is the Easter Bunny there? Like, who?
I don't think we've seen any holidays, have we?
I know.
What do they celebrate?
The seven. Maybe each seven, each guy of the seven has a holiday. So, and I'm Dave Klein, by the way. So let's go ahead and jump right into King's Landing. Speaking of King's Landing and the fact that we come right snap back to dead Joffrey as Cersei's blaming Tyrion and they're searching for Sansa. So right away, she's like, where's Sansa? They noticed that really quickly that she was gone.
I mean, she has all the reason in the world to be the one that would kill him. But it's just funny because they've been sort of saving her to this point, and now they can blame her. And thankfully enough, someone had plans to get her out of there. But it looks like she was also, like, in the middle of something she didn't know was going on. So she's sort of taking the blame for everything anyway.
Exactly. It's like Sansa's always been in a difficult position being in King's Landing. There's no good place for her to be. Because part of me is like, oh, great, they got her out. She's not going to have to stand trial where they probably would just kill her for the fun of it. But then it just makes her look more guilty because she's left. And it doesn't seem like she's really gotten into a better situation. Like, he's very upfront about being like, don't trust anyone. So it's just she's getting passed from bad circumstance to bad circumstance where she has no control. And she, like, gets hints of friendship that are just ripped away from her.
No, it's Littlefinger. He's a great guy.
I mean, he was friends with her mother, though.
Oh, that's... She, like... Don't you remember when she, like, spurned him with the bones? Like, he brought her Ned's bones. And he was like, but I love you. And she was like, are you joking me? This is my dead husband. And then I felt like he actually got really offended. And from now on, he's kind of just acted in his own accord. It's not really going towards that childhood love. I really feel like they've positioned him to not care nearly as much about her. Like, he's over it and moved on with, like, his own life and is just now about the scheming and about the money. And Sansa's a pawn, not something he cares about.
I mean, I think he definitely has his own agenda, but I don't think that he will kill her or put her in harm's way.
Well, Westeros Charlie's saying, does Littlefinger truly have Sansa's best interests at heart, or is he just using her? I wonder. He did say he would take her home. But, I mean, we do know, as you said, Sarah, that, I mean, he was in love with Kat, mm-hmm. with Catelyn Stark. And we also find out a couple things in this scene that he knew about the necklace. He basically fed Dantos all of those lines.
Not only did he know about it, he had it made.
Yeah, he had it made and smashes it and tosses it off the
boat. Was that a good idea to put it in the boat with Dantos? Because it's like, wouldn't you want to throw that in the water and not in the boat so that someone could find it?
Maybe it was too Titanic-esque. Maybe it was just... I mean, it was unsmart for him, I think. I think that Littlefinger normally plans out things a little bit better. And if he's smart enough to have hired Dantos, obviously then for what, weeks? Because he's been planning this. This is a full-fledged plan. You would think that he would at least, I don't know, sink the boat or something. I guess he's just assuming it's going to go out with the tide.
Well, a lot of people on the, from YouTube in the comments were talking about and just speculating, like, where's Littlefinger been this whole time? Because he's been gone for a while. So there you go. This is where Littlefinger's been.
He's back. See, I did not miss him. So I did not wonder about it.
Oh, you weren't welcoming him back with open arms?
He has that voice. He has just a certain tone to his voice that I'm just starting to associate with evilness, where he's like, Sansa. So, like, what's going on?
So while he orchestrated it, we still don't know the rest of the details about who poisoned Joffrey.
Right, and he also immediately insinuates that that Sansa killed Joffrey. He says, "You killed Joffrey," and she's like, "What? I didn't do anything." He's like, "Oh, I mean, everyone thinks you did." But when we get these scenes with Cersei, it seems like Cersei really believes that it was Tyrion. So regardless of anything, to her, it was Tyrion because of what he'd said earlier when she had the wrong whore, when she had Ross instead of Shay, and he was like, "I'm going to turn your joy into ashes in your mouth just when you think you're safe." So that line coming back from last season.
Mm-hmm. I think it's easy to turn that on him because you're always going to blame your enemy first. And just like when Tyrion's in the cell and he's like, "Well, I would say that Cersei had something to do with this, but she's the only one who actually cared for Joffrey." So now that leaves a unique murderer at hand.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like, of course he would look to her to blame her first because that's his enemy. And so that's the way she's looking at him.
Right.
I think that's very, very rational for Cersei to be so in grief and to think exactly that these are their, like, they play off each other, they battle each other. So that to me makes sense why she thinks it's him. What doesn't make sense is why it seems that Tywin is also leaning towards this belief. Because I feel like Tywin, who values wisdom so much, should be able to look at the circumstances and be able to see that it's obvious, like, Tyrion pointed it out. He would never poison someone while gawking at him.
Well, we have
like
to keep... sorry.
Oh, God, what I had head.
No, I was just going to say, with Tywin, we have to keep in mind, though, that he hates Tyrion. He hates him because Tyrion was the one who killed, in quotes, Tywin's wife and Tyrion's mother because of being birthed. And therefore, he's always hated him, and he considers Tyrion to be his curse for reaching too high. Like, he really thinks that. He absolutely hates Tyrion. So I don't think he's too upset about this turn of events.
I mean, I agree with that. But we've seen in the past that despite Tywin's dislike for Tyrion, he still kind of gives him his own right. Like, he still...
Well, he made Tyrion the Hand, right?
Or, like, he will follow his son's wishes in a way. Like, he'll live up to his deals, like when he had made a deal with the Hill people. Like, he uses it for his own benefit. Tywin uses, like, Tyrion's actions for his own benefit, and he was planning. But to me, he's just always such a smart character, and he does look at the big picture versus, like, these little instances of, like, fighting or deaths, and he, like, really looks at the overall how to rule a kingdom, how to make his legacy. And in this, he's like, oh, he points at it because Cersei say so, and because he was there. Like, to me, as an outsider, maybe it's because we know it wasn't him. It's just so obvious that he wasn't in charge of the poisoning.
I think that Tywin doesn't care, actually, who it was at all. And he also doesn't care if Tyrion takes the blame for it. I think that he's just happy that Tommen is now the king, and that's his priority right now.
And let's speak on that scene. This is a scene I really enjoyed, actually, because it was Tywin, who I consider to be the smart one. I mean, Tyrion's very smart as well, but I mean, of, like, when you look at Jaime and Cersei, Tywin is pretty smart. He's built an empire, essentially, too. And I like him being the teacher for Tommen and teaching him, like, what is it to be a good king? Is it power? Is it justice? Is it strength? Like, what makes a good king? And I like that he brings in all these examples of the kings of the past and really acts as a great teacher for Tommen.
I do actually think Tommen will be a good king.
I think Tommen will, too. I think that there is a good part. I feel like this scene really embodied the theme of the episode, which was just that there was a lot of people being molded. Like, of people finding their other person who's going to mold, shape them, lead them in their direction. For Tywin taking Tommen, I think that the good lining is that he is smart. He is wise. But I noticed all the advice where he was like, oh, you need to keep learning. You need to take everyone's advice. It was never, you know, get your own wisdom and add in other people's advice. It was directly, just take people's advice. Just take your advisor's advice.
Well, he did say until you're of age, and then if you're smart, you'll still take your advisor's advice.
To me, it was just reading as Tywin's really going to just be, He's
king.
Going to be king, and this is
the
going to be
master.
Exactly. Yeah. And so, I mean, for me, it was like if he was really trying to shape him, he'd be like, together, instead of like, listen to your advisors, listen to your advisors.
Let me put up.
But it's
my
better
hand
than
in your
Cersei
ass.
Being yeah. the puppeteer, so, or
yeah.
someone else.
Yeah, I mean, I go kind of back and forth on how I feel about Tywin a lot of times because I actually do think he is smart, and I mm-hmm. think that actually probably wouldn't be the worst ruler of King's Landing. I mean, other than. The fact that I really like the Starks, he's a smart guy, and he's done questionable things for certain. I don't like his hate the way he treats Tyrion, but he is really smart. And
I feel like we all really like Tywin because we don't get to see his social life. We don't get to see, like, the reality TV of what Tywin's doing, or else we wouldn't probably like him as much as we do.
It'll give us more character development if we get the mountain back, because that's what a lot of...
Sounds like we are.
Because I think that... The mountain's actions are going to maybe give us some insight into Tywin's more dark side. Mm-hmm. Because with his fight with the Prince of Dorne, bringing up that his sister was not only murdered, but, like, raped, and it was very gruesome, whether or not that was at his orders, how he's involved with the mountain. Like, it's one thing to be smart. It's another thing to be smart and, like, have people just playing out your cruelty. Because, like, does that really make him any better than Joffrey, who was just cruel to everyone's face? So... I'm interested to see their relationship and see that
part of
him. Well, I mean,
you look at Joffrey, though, and Joffrey was cruel for the sake mm-hmm. of being cruel.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Tywin, and he's cruel, but I think to him, it's because he has to be.
Right.
It's for the sake of gaining something mm-hmm. in his mind that's better. It's like, well, I have to get this done. I have people who will do it, but it's for something better. He's not doing it just for the sake of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's where the difference lies.
I don't think when the mountain comes back that he'll be around for very long if Tywin is actually being true to wanting help from the Dorns, because he is offering, you know, Oberyn so much here that it seems like he's willing to sacrifice the mountain.
Yeah,
a good point that way. Though is that why the Dorns were able to withstand the Targaryen dragons.
Yeah, I'm not sure
because I mean Prince Oberyn was said to be like a crazy fighter. He has you know this crazy nickname, and he's obviously lived his life as a warrior. But obviously, I feel like the Dorns are hiding something or
with love.
If you love a dragon enough, it will become.
Dragons are actually gay and they're accepted there.
There we
so
go.
Not,
that's why.
They're not angry.
That's exactly what it is. Yeah. We've cracked Game of Thrones. We're done. Show's over. So back on Tywin's subject, though, River Hunter's saying that he thinks Tywin's more likable in the show than the books. And I'd agree with that, but I still like him for the sake of he actually is wise. I think he is. Brian Lee's saying to me he's not likable. He's cutthroat. And I miss Joffrey saying, great, I don't know, who misses Joffrey? I miss Joffrey on the chat, though, saying he was likable because he stood up to Joffrey. So a lot of different opinions. But I thought it was hilarious in the scene that he's having this entire thing with Tommen, teaching him how to be a good king, right over Joffrey's dead body and a grieving Cersei, just sitting there listening to this, where he clearly just does not care at all.
Yeah, it was funny for him to talk over him and be like, he wasn't a good king, and that's why he's
right in front of his man. Yeah.
I mean, these aren't things that she wasn't aware of.
Yeah, the deathbed of Joffrey was, I guess...
His eyes were like, what, cookies?
They were rocks.
Well, they were rocks.
They
were rocks.
They
were
like cookies. Of course they did.
Body area, so desecrated. Not only verbal abuse, but then some... sexual affairs.
Yeah, like. As Jaime comes in to spend some alone time with Cersei.
Wow. I thought that Jaime had really taken a turn with his character, but he really did rape her here, and I don't think this is going to fix the relationship.
Total relationship fixer. What?
I mean,
are you
I
crazy?
Would agree with you.
I don't know how rape's really... taken there, but
so to
it
me,
didn't look like she was enjoying
to
it.
Me as someone... And, for a book thing, he kind of, in a different area, does this with her, but he doesn't, he starts to do this, and she's saying no, but then it turns into a yes, and she starts to consent and want it and enjoy it. So it's kind of like, as she was first starting to say no, I'm like, ah, that's all right, she's going to start, she actually really, I hate saying this, she really does want it, because that's very rape mentality, so... I hate saying it like that, but she actually does kind of want it and enjoys it in the book. So it was really hard seeing it like, oh my God, really, he's really raping her. Wow. This is really awkward.
I don't know.
And right over their dead son.
This scene was a lot for me. I was like, I wasn't expecting him to have this turn. Like, I thought we were seeing growth. Mm-hmm. And where his mind's at that this is going to improve his circumstances, I don't know. And on top of the fact that she kept repeating the line, "It's not right," I was like, is this not right motivated by the fact that she's come to terms that she shouldn't be sleeping with her brother? Is it motivated by the fact that she doesn't want him because she doesn't see him as a good person because he wasn't there, he doesn't have a hand, he hasn't offended, or he, you know, he isn't living up to what she wanted?
Or the environment.
Just the environment that they're in front of their dead son.
I think it was all-encompassing in that moment, it seemed to be.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, so well, how she feels.
So on the chat, Hot Pie saying really it was pretty rapey in the books. I mean, it was, but it wasn't as bad. That's really what I meant to say. Like,
maybe because you weren't seeing it.
No, but I'm saying that because she actually did end up consenting and enjoying
it.
Well,
that's human nature to consent
but
and
she,
enjoy.
But she never does in this point. Yeah. That's what I mean. Yeah. It's like, here she's completely... Yeah. Like, and she's even more so against it at the start. Like, in the book, she didn't seem as much like... Maybe it's just the way I read it, but then she didn't seem as upset about it happening in the first place. It was more of just like, to her saying no is more like, no, we shouldn't do it here, not no, I don't want this. Mm-hmm. Which, I mean, it's still rape, but it didn't seem as bad. I don't know. They're both bad.
It's really difficult to talk about this kind of
circumstances.
So let's talk about other things.
If I had a heart for Joffrey, I'd be like, oh, poor Joffrey, all around your dead body. But I don't care that much about him.
No, and he was kind of made a joke of, and if you notice, there was no one there to mourn him.
Look, I just want to point out, people in the chat, I don't think it's right. No, I don't. So, neither version. It just didn't seem as bad. That's all I'm saying.
Rape is no.
His wife was not there to defend him.
Poor. Yeah.
So, anyways, speaking of his wife, or of Marjorie, or his former would-have-been wife.
His widow?
His widow, yeah. Marjorie, kind of upset that she's not going to be the queen. But she's more so the queen than with the whole Renly thing, but she's still not because the marriage was never consummated.
Is she just going to get passed on to, like,
Tommen?
I mean, that's what happened with Ned Stark. I mean, they never actually fulfilled the marriage, but Kat was just engaged to his older brother. And then before that worked out, it just kind of, like, passed down the line. So it's been happened before.
That.
It's a little
yeah.
different because these two
that's
went through
point.
A ceremony. But... As you said, not consummated. So it's not against the Game of Thrones playbook to exchange wives
or Marjorie.
Throughout the family.
She doesn't seem to be in it for love.
No.
She's also, as I said, theme of this episode, being molded by
right.
Queen of Thorns. It's very much just taking How to Train Your Man to the next level.
Yes.
But,
I would agree.
Right. I mean, she was doing a good job with Joffrey with the whole, like, getting him to start giving things to the poor and all that. So she actually was doing a good job. But, yeah, kind of funny that Olenna or the Queen of Thorns is just like, well, the next one will be a lot easier. Oh, well, whatever. Just doesn't care.
Yeah, she never did care for Joffrey.
What I couldn't read is if... Did she care about her husband that died? Or was, like, she had to look at?
Oh, no.
Because that was the longest, like, almost monologue that I didn't get a result out of. I was like, I'm confused.
Well,
did
she
you
called
like
him
or not like him?
She called him a lumpy piece of dough she sat next to countless times at countless dinners. And then she just stared at him as he was a lumpy piece of dough when he laid on the table dead. So it was like...
Indifference?
I think it was an arrangement.
I mean, I think a lot of times, too, with the Queen of Thorns, and she talks about the men in the mm-hmm. Tyrell family, she very much views them as idiots, every single one of them. Like, men are just dumb. So
breeding stock.
Yeah, pretty much. So, she just thinks that they're all dumb, and, I mean, she very much, I think, views herself as a manipulator and someone who has a lot mm-hmm. of power, and Marjorie, too, so she's kind of teaching Marjorie the ways, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Well... this is where I'm going to lead to. Like, Marjorie, if she does go to Tommen, I'm like, if she is cursed, how quickly is he going to be out of this episode? Because I feel like he just entered. He's mm-hmm. obviously kind of been in the background for, I guess, 4 seasons. And I don't think he's had, like, an entire line, basically, until this episode.
Yeah.
I think we've maybe heard, like, 4 words from him.
Yeah.
And so I'm like...
Which is why he's going to be a good king.
But is that really going to be his presence? He's just going to stand there every so often. No lines. It's a non-speaking role.
It will
role.
Be a bit more dull than having Joffrey around. I will miss him for the entertainment.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well.
Maybe Marjorie can teach him how to talk.
Maybe.
He'll, yeah. I guess I'm sure, like, we'll see Marjorie working her ways. And she's been playing a bigger role throughout these seasons than she did at these points in the book. So I do like they've expanded her character a lot. And she's enjoyable to watch. She's an interesting character, so I like what they've done with her. But let's move on to Prince Oberyn, who is at the whorehouse having a blast, having a good time. He loves both sides. It's all right.
Just visually entering into this scene, I was so kind of lost in body parts, like trying to figure out how many people were in this giant bed. I was like, wait, am I looking at an arm? Am I looking at an egg? How they just approached this with the camera that like,
it was good.
Wound its way
naked.
In. I thought it was done really well. And then I was trying to count them as they left. And I was like, is there six people here? I'm not quite sure. But
lots of love in that bed.
Going
good time having by all.
Happy
all we're having a good time.
He keeps getting interrupted. I mean, the Lannisters are always walking in on his endeavors.
Well, he's also always having sex.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much that's just where he is 24/7, it seems like. Unless he's at a wedding where a purple wedding, as everyone's calling it. Unless he's at a purple wedding, he's having sex somewhere. That's what it seems like.
To live.
But Lord Tywin comes in and wants to talk, and they have a pretty important talk where essentially Tywin sort of, in a way, asks if Oberyn was involved because it's well known how much Oberyn hates the Lannisters. Mm-hmm. And Oberyn says, look, I only hate the person or grandfather who may have been involved, but never the child, because the child clearly had nothing to do with it. So he places the blame off of himself. And Tywin wants to do sort of a marriage of the two houses in a way where he's going to include Oberyn on the small council. He wants Oberyn to sit in on Tyrion's
trial.
Wedding. Yeah, and
the trial.
Wedding. And the wedding.
No more weddings.
That already happened. The trial. So thank you for that.
Sure.
So, yeah, really trying to help give the Dornish more power and pretty much unite the Seven Kingdoms.
And in return, he promises a meeting with the Mountain and Oberyn, which is basically saying that Oberyn will get his revenge on the Mountain.
Yeah, I mean, he's giving him a lot of power, and I think it's a good place to put Dorne, and I'm excited to see more of them, so I hope that alliance works out. But if Tywin's trying to control the jury, I don't think that's going to work in his favor. Like, if he's trying to control the votes of the trial, I don't think that's going to work, because I think what we've seen for Prince Oberyn is that while he, like, number one seems to value, like, sex, and number two values, like, fighting, I think one of his major priorities is family. And I think that's why he wants to see the Mountain so bad. And for someone who values family so much, to see their associate try and go after their own son for something that he knows, like, didn't happen, especially if he does try and manipulate the truth, I think that's going to backfire. And I think Oberyn's going to be like, you can't do this. Like, I don't like you, and I don't like your legacy because of this reason. So I think it's going to, if that's what he's trying to get at, I think it's going to backfire, and Oberyn's going to come out on Tyrion's side.
Yeah, I think Oberyn's like very reasonable, and he obviously is not going to follow anybody else's rules or votes for that matter. So and it's interesting that he is like this goddess of poison or whatever. He studied the poison, so he knows all about it. And I'm not sure exactly, you know, in the trial how they'll be able to even point the finger at anyone, but I think that he had that little interaction with Tyrion, like, a couple weeks ago. And Tyrion was, like, the one who greeted him. So, obviously, I feel like they have a little bit of connection, as, like, Tyrion was the only one who sort of, like, stepped forward from the Lannisters to welcome him.
I think they also bonded, I could be mistaken if I'm someone on the chat remembers, is that part of it was that they both connected over being second sons and not being the one who is, like, dominant and wanted all the attention. And I think that they did have, it wasn't a full friendship or anything, but I think they had a little bit of a bond.
Yeah.
Right. So I think he at least has him on his side.
Well, on the chat, Brian Lee saying the Viper wants the Mountain. That's it. It's an easy bribe. And for those of you wondering if the Viper is, Prince Oberyn's nickname is the Red Viper, and that has to do with the poison that Kristen was mentioning, how he's known for poison. And don't worry, that's not a spoiler, just his nickname is the Red Viper, just like how Olenna Tyrell's nickname is the Queen of Thorns. He's known as the Red Viper, so I think that's a pretty badass nickname. But here's another thing, too, in this scene that we get is that Tywin actually acknowledges that about the dragons. he actually seems to care mm-hmm. about it and acknowledge that. Whereas you just kind of hear things and you're like, well, maybe that's just people acting mm-hmm. crazy. But right. he actually seems to legitimately think of it as a concern that there could be dragons. So
he definitely weighs all of the possibilities and takes them in the deepest
consideration.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like, he plans for the worst case scenario.
Yeah.
And he's preparing far in advance. Like, he's not waiting for them actually to come, which is right. smart. And he obviously needs the Dornish for something.
That's why Tywin has wisdom. I'm just saying.
Good job.
So we come to Tyrion in prison and being visited by Podrick Payne and his noble squire. And Tyrion telling Pod, from his point of view, he did not murder Joffrey. And I don't think anyone really believes it was Tyrion. Do they?
No. I don't think so.
I don't.
Other than Cersei.
Well, yeah. Cersei very strongly does.
And Joffrey.
And Joffrey, yeah.
Joffrey, Cersei, and I think maybe Tywin.
I think Tywin knows it wasn't Tyrion. I just don't think he would ever verbalize that. Because he doesn't care.
I don't know. I think there was one line in there, and I can't remember it exactly. But it was more or less, he said that they wanted to avenge the traitors of the king. And he was talking about Tyrion's trial. So it seemed like he was linking the two together and putting, like, an implementation of guilt on that. I don't know. We'll find out, I think, obviously, next week when this trial comes.
Yeah, hopefully we'll see some of that. I'm not sure. I don't know. From the previews, I don't know if we saw much trial stuff, but I hope we do, because it's going to be fun times. Fun times for all. But we get that Tyrion actually didn't know Sansa disappeared until this moment, and he realizes, oh, man, that's going to make me look really guilty that she ran away. Because why else would she run away unless I was guilty?
Yeah.
So that's going to make him look really bad.
Mm-hmm. But I think he's also wise enough to realize that she wouldn't run away unless someone she trusted was kind of guiding her to run away. Because he knows Sansa. So I think he'll put the pieces together.
I agree. The doubt that it caused for me is whether or not he obviously knows that it makes it seem like Sansa's involved, but the smart cleverness in him maybe could be able to point the finger at her and say that she did it. If he thinks she's safe, if he thinks mm-hmm. she's away, and if he wants to find a way out, he could, I guess, point at her direction.
I don't think he'd ever do that. He's, like, the only one that she's had in her court this entire season, pretty mm-hmm. much, in past seasons. So I feel like he'll never say anything bad. I definitely think that he would sacrifice himself if it came down to her neck.
Well, and then another thing when it comes to the laws of Westeros and marriage is that the union of marriage makes it so wife and husband are considered one.
Mm.
So if one person commits it, it means the other person's guilty.
Oh.
So I know they haven't said that, but I don't think of that as being a spoiler saying that. That's how their customs are. So if she's considered and deemed guilty, he is too. If he's deemed guilty, she's considered guilty too.
And we already saw in the previews that Cersei wants her in her head too, so.
Yep.
She's blaming them as one.
Yeah. And we also get, and we had this in the previous scene, but he learns about the different mm-hmm. judges. And we have it, so now the judges on the trial are going to be Lord Tywin, Mace Tyrell, and who's also not going to be too happy if he thinks Tyrion did it, even though Tyrion thinks that Mace will just do anything that Tywin says. But, I mean, that was, Margaery was about to be queen. He's not going to be too happy about this death. And then we have Oberyn. So those are the three judges presiding over him. And he's allowed to have witnesses, but Varys is witnessing for Cersei. So Varys won't stand for him. Sansa's gone. And he wants Jaime.
They won't let him see Bronn.
Right, they won't let him see Bronn. And he wants to speak with Jaime. So that's the one hope
that
he has.
Meanwhile, Jaime's being told to kill him.
And he's also raping.
Yeah.
But I think Jaime will turn around from this and stick up for his brother.
Yeah, I mean...
He already kind of did in this episode when Cersei was saying, I want you to kill Tyrion. He was like, he's my brother. He's our brother. So.
You know, something with Jaime, I mean, you saying the whole rape thing again with him, they've really made a lot of things that he does in the show to be worse than they are in the book. Like when he was in prison and he killed the person in prison a couple seasons ago, he didn't do that in the book either. So, and then this full-on rape, again, wasn't that. It was more far, far more brutal in this scene. So I don't know why they're casting this really poor light on him, but I actually think he comes out better in the books. But regardless, that's who Tyrion wants to see. And we find out that Podrick was offered to be a sir and be a knight and seems to have turned it down to stick up for
Because Podrick's such a sweetheart.
Tyrion. Yeah.
And he looked so nice in this episode.
But I really do think he needs to leave, just like Shay. And it's funny that Tyrion keeps bringing up Shay, because that's also a reminder for the audience not to forget her. So obviously she's going to come up in the future, and I don't think that she'll be alive when she does.
Maybe she'll bring Lord Baelish.
But regardless, he wants Shay gone, and Podrick says no one's heard of her, so he thinks that's a good thing, and he wants Podrick now to leave because he's afraid for his life. So with that, let's go ahead and move to Arya and the Hound. So they are heading to the Eyrie, which is where her aunt is, a.k.a. Lysa Arryn, who's a wonderful person. And they come across to a couple farmers, or a farmer and his daughter, who they're in his land. And Arya becoming quite the smooth talker there.
She can just really throw out those lies.
I was just thinking, good, you guessed right. Congratulations, Arya. You won this round. I mean, I guess they're probably in Riverrun land, so that was probably why she assumed that. But still, good work, Arya. Good thinking.
I mean, she really seemed to read them, because not only did she figure out which land to say, but she also kind of paralleled their life story.
Yeah,
she was like,
that's a good point.
Oh, and this is my father, and we don't have a mom. And like, yeah. It just turned out to be exactly kind of their circumstance, so they could connect.
Yeah.
It's like really reading into people.
I just feel bad because Arya, she always thinks that she's like doing something good, and then the Hound turns it into like this evil plan that she was part in the whole time. But she didn't.
But they had that connection when she got that pony. They became one for a little bit, and she thought they were working together.
I mean, they very much are still one and working together, but it's just sad because she still hasn't learned, I guess, that you have to be rough in this world.
It's like, I can't tell if who's rubbing off on whom more. Because it's like, at the beginning, she seemed to be rubbing off on him because he was willing to go with the lie and accept some food and not, like, beat it out of them. And then at the end, after he did steal their money, although he didn't kill them for once, which is, I guess, good, he just punched him. But then Arya, although insulting him, left with him. Like, she didn't, like, try and steal the money back or get it back. So they're kind of both rubbing off on each other. Mm-hmm. And then in the center, you have, like, that moment where they're both gulping down at the same time. So they're going through this, like, flux of who's influencing who. And it's fun.
Yeah, I feel like they have their own sideshow. Like, because they haven't been a part of any of these areas that we talk about. They've just been on the road for so long that they're now, like, almost separate from the show.
Yeah, they really are. It's kind of like they're just somewhere off in Riverrun area or somewhere heading to the Eyrie. But I love this scene, and especially if you understand everything with the Seven, where they're praying, the farmers are praying to the Seven. And no one really prays to the stranger. That's a very typical thing, is people usually avoid the stranger because the stranger is the one who indicates death and takes people. And so no one actually prays to them. So it was great to me seeing the Hound be... go, and we ask the stranger not to kill us in our bed tonight for no damn reason at all. It's a hilarious line, and also for the whole, like, backstory of the fact that no one prays the stranger, the fact that he just throws that in there. I thought it was great.
And I like that they brought up the owner of the house, the farmer. He said, well, you have guessed right. You've eaten my food. So basically saying you're safe, unlike the Red Wedding.
Yeah.
And that's something that we had brought up before, the when someone is safe by this, but they haven't really announced it in that way on the show, that it's like kind of a definite custom. It actually functions as a rule for etiquette and how that they come to terms with each other.
It's like a sin.
Yeah, and it's a note too that these are the small folk, and now we're kind of getting a glimpse into how the small folk feel, and they really, really don't like the phrase because of this. Now, at least this group, but I think it's pretty representative of anyone who believes in the Seven, which is the belief there, is that, hey, we don't like the phrase because they did this. That was evil of them. They're going to go burn in the Seven Hells for this. So they really dislike this. Of course, the Hound doesn't care at all about anything.
It's okay. He's got the stranger.
Yeah. So after they get this great offer of, like, hey, you can work for us, we'll feed you, we'll give you silver to just defend us for a little while because the Freys aren't doing a good job. Hound finds out where the silver is and just immediately bashes the farmer in. Doesn't kill him, but just kind of knocks him out.
That's progress.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. At least he doesn't kill him. He didn't bring the stranger there.
He is the stranger.
Him and Arya together. Yeah. I mean, it's nice that we didn't have another death here, but I thought this could have totally taken a different turn. I was, like, thinking, oh, he's going to try and stay with them, and then Arya's not going to be able to get to the Eyrie, and she's going to have to stay, too, and they're going to be in this little house. Guess that didn't work. Like, well, I was completely off, as
usual.
Coming
soon to a town near you.
Yeah, it's, like, about to be buddy-buddy partnering up, and nope.
Exactly.
So, yeah, didn't work at all, and now Arya is once again pissed off at him, but he tells her, and again, you kind of get her taking things from him and start kind of learning from him, and he gives her this take of, he says, I just understand the way things are, because this family's going to die when winter comes, it doesn't matter, at least someone has silver, this is just the way things are. And Arya really does see things in black and white. I'm not saying the Hound's right, he was pretty obnoxious in this scene, but he really does have just this really down-to-earth view of everything and how the world works. And every time he talks about knights, he's like, knights are just swords. That's all it is. We just kill people. There's nothing romantic about them. So that's his view of everything. And it really is in a lot of ways. That's just the way things are, and that's how he understands it. So he's kind of teaching Arya, who has this black-and-white view of things, how it is. But Arya also hearing for real what happened to her parents in this scene as well. Like, now she's getting a second view as opposed to just listening to the Hound saying, like, there's no reason to go back. She's once again hearing other people talk about what happened to her family.
That has to be really hard, too, because we always see it in Sansa's eyes whenever someone's referring to, you know, Rob or Catelyn. Her eyes are always, like, glossed over, and she's really sad. But Arya is, like, such a little actress, like, that you never get those, like, close-up shots of her, like, mourning them when they're spoke of. In that way, she's kind of accepting as the Hound has kind of taught her to be, like, tough and hardened by it all, mourning it each time.
Yeah. It's more of, like, a revenge path. It's more of an acceleration than something, like, a grief that she sinks into. That's her difference. I think that another interesting point of their conversations this episode was that they used it as another way to bring in the other side of the world, because we have, as we spoke about earlier, we have Tywin finally acknowledging the dragons, but then the Hound mentions that he might end up going across to become, what was it? I think it to become some sort of sellsword. Mm-hmm. And then Arya mentioned that she knows someone over there.
Yeah.
And so they're intertwining these countries even more and bringing Westeros even, like, I think we're going to have more interactions. I think that's going to be really fun.
I'm excited for that.
Yeah, I am too. So let's also talk about, let's move over to the Wall, where everyone pretty much thinks that Gilly and Sam are sleeping together, and no one believes that Sam killed a White. So, yeah.
Everyone believes the wrong things.
Pretty much. Although, in the book, he actually, like, people saw him kill a White, and they call him... they give him a nickname for it, and he actually hates it and doesn't want people to think of that. He's like, no, I didn't kill it. It was the sword that killed it, not me.
What's the nickname?
I do, but I'm like, is that a spoiler? Because people get really mad at me when I say things sometimes.
There was something that they yelled out in this episode, and they said it in more of a joking tone.
Okay, maybe it was then. I didn't hear, but I guess Sam the Slayer.
It was Sam
the Slayer. Okay, good.
Because he was, like, walking up the stairs, remember? And he was repeating it, Sam the Slayer.
Okay, I was taking a note, so I wasn't sure. But okay, yeah, so Sam the Slayer is his nickname that he's gotten from this.
The funny thing is that in the show, it very much seems more like an insult or, like sarcastic.
Well, in the book, it's mixed. Like, some people believe it and some people don't. So some people are like, that's a great nickname. And he's like, actually, people are mocking me when they say it. So it's kind of a mix. But it's better than Sam the Piggy, which is what he was before, Sir Piggy.
Yeah, moving up.
So moving up in life to the Slayer. So Sam the Slayer is worried about Gilly and wants her to go somewhere safe. And there's that moment of Gilly being like, well, don't you want me?
Don't you think about me naked?
Come on.
And then he was like...
I want to protect you.
Yeah, but he stuttered after he said I, and if you ask me, he was definitely going to say I love you, right?
I agree. Right. That's where my thoughts went.
Yeah. I think that was obvious to everyone.
But instead, I want to protect you and send you to, what is it, Moletown?
Moletown. And Moletown is nothing to write home about.
You're not wilding, are you?
That honestly, I censored myself. I felt like she wasn't safe there. I felt like she was more safe at Castle Black after going there. At least she had her own corner.
I think that's how we were supposed to feel. Is that not only is she might be sexually exposed at this place where everyone goes to buy whores, but on top of that, like, it's dirty, it's not clean, and they seem to already hate her.
Yeah. So, not the best place for her, but Sam thinks she's safe, and Gillies just says, like, well, it's better for you, not for me, so she's clearly not happy with this whole situation.
What do you guys think? Do you think it's better for him? Do you think that he thinks he's doing right by her?
I think that he's trying to do the best he can, but in being so overprotective of Castle Black and, like, scared of his brothers, he's not seeing what's around him in Moletown, and he's putting her at greater risk. On top of that, I think that for Gilly, all of her questioning and all of her doubt in him is showing that she has very true feelings for him and she wants to love him.
Right. I mean, it's kind of a mix because, I mean, the Castle Black, they hate the wildlings too. But it does seem like with Sam there, she actually did seem pretty safe in Castle Black. So, I mean, but then at the same time, you've got the fact that we got a bunch of Thens and wildlings coming to go try to destroy everything about Castle Black, so...
They might stop by Moletown, though.
That's true. They might stop by Moletown. So,
you don't know.
What a great town name, Moletown.
I keep on thinking Motown.
That would be awesome. I wish it was Motown. That would be awesome. So, I don't know. There really isn't a safe place at the moment, and it's really just Sam trying his best, but it does seem like... even though the Hundred Swords might think about her naked every night, at least they are supposed to live by an honor code. Supposed to. Most of them don't, but they're supposed to. And at least that's 100 people with swords who are going to protect you. So.
And it seems like they're going to need it, because I've always known that the wildlings were dangerous and good fighters, but out of all the episodes, this one was the most scary, and this one portrayed them as being the most ferocious.
Ravenous. Right. Yeah.
And I was actually scared for such a small band to make such an impact, and they were just brutal, and everything was quick. And on top of that, they seemed, like, very skilled with their weapons.
And Ygritte was a part of it.
Ygritte was the first blow with her arrow.
And she looks heartless. Heartless in this scene.
Jon Snow stole her heart.
And
she has a hole where the heart was supposed to be.
Just
gone.
It's just anger.
Just take it out on some random people. That's how you deal it.
I guess it'll prove to be a good fight later on.
We have to be so heartless.
And I'm ready for the Thens to be gone as well. They are
so scary.
Yeah, the Thens are really, I don't know, they're kind of over the top, in my opinion. Like, over the top bad guys. Like, for a show where everything's so gray, to have such an over the top bad guy like that, it's a little extreme, in my opinion, that they are. I mean, in the books, I know a lot of people don't like the Thens in the Wildlings in the North, like, beyond the Wall, but they don't make them seem this...
evil.
Evil. Just straight-up evil. So I like the shades of gray. That's one thing that's so great about the show.
I think the only guy that seems that way is the bald leader guy.
We're going to eat your mom, and we're going to eat your dad!
That was a pretty accurate.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, but I think he's primarily the one that, you know, is the face of the Thens, and that's why maybe we're seeing him as, like, over the top and this huge villain. But, I mean, Ygritte's one of them, so, and we know her backstory, so.
Here's the thing that was ridiculous to me, too, about this scene, is he has the boy there, and he goes, "You know your way to the wall? How about you go tell them crows about what we did?" And it's like, why? That's so stupid. I mean, like, why not try to surprise them? Why are you sending somebody to alert them of your presence?
I mean,
you are dumb tactically.
They already knew they were coming, though.
I mean, I guess, like, this is a difference that bothers me. Like, in the book, they shot Jon Snow, but they don't know if he survived or not. They're not sure.
They still don't know.
They still don't know if Jon's alive or not.
There's a seed of doubt where we mentioned that they point out that Ygritte could have shot, like, I think it was, like, a rabbit or a squirrel or something through the eye. And so if she wanted to kill him, she would. So
right.
One of them has a doubt.
I mean, she hit this guy dead on.
Exactly.
But, I mean, point is, though, like, it just seems dumb to me that they would do this. But the point being that apparently, as we find out in the next scene, maybe they're trying to draw out people from the wall to come deal with them to protect the towns. That would so it would leave the wall a little bit more open.
Yeah, and everyone's banding together to protect the wall at Castle Black.
You know what? I just randomly, a couple days ago, my roommate had Mulan on, the Disney movie Mulan. And this is like what the over-the-top bad guys did in that movie. It's a great movie, but the bad guys are very classic Disney evil, over-the-top, black and white.
The Huns?
The Huns. And the Hun just goes like to Soldier and is like, go tell them we're coming. And it just reminded me of that. I'm like, Game of Thrones, you're better than this.
And did that happen in the book?
No.
Okay.
I mean,
maybe that little kid will come into play later. You never know.
Maybe.
But let's not stutter on such a dull moment of the show.
So, okay, we're back at the wall where Aemon wants everyone to protect the wall. And pretty much all the leaders, John agrees, like, you know what? It sucks that this is happening, but we need to protect the wall. That's the smarter thing to do.
Until they find out.
Until they find out, as the Rangers go and Rangers return from Craster's in bad shape. That
Broke free of their chains.
Right, free of their chains that Craster... Well, basically, the problem is that all the people who left the wall are holding up in Craster's place. The real problem is that not that they're going to necessarily run and be a wildling, but that they could tell the truth about how many men are at the wall. Because John lied and said there were 1,000, when really there's only 100. So
Carl knows.
A big difference. Carl knows. Yeah, it's Carl who's running things up there in that place.
So now they have to go get them. And kill the mutiny, how would that be? Mutineers?
Yes.
Those who committed mutiny.
So Brian Lee's saying about that whole thing, he wants to draw them out from the wall so they can attack them in small groups. I mean, that's true, but at the same time, you're alerting them to your presence.
And
so
isn't that against the... Well, I don't remember what the original plan was. The original plan was to attack them from both sides.
I think the original plan was to try to sneak up on them. I'm pretty sure that was the idea. But regardless, that's not going to happen now. So anyways, John thinks it's a good idea to head up to Craster's Keep, and we need to kill these guys who are there so word of how outnumbered we are doesn't reach Mass Raider. So it seems like that's going to be their goal.
Step one.
Yeah, step one. Reduce risk. So with that,
let's... Step two, defend wall.
Yeah.
Step three.
Oh, hopefully luck. Survive. So Stannis and Davos. So Davos is... with Stannis reading a note about how Joffrey is killed, and this is where Stannis has now found out. And he's pissed at Davos for letting Gendry go and having Gendry escape. Because look what his blood did. His blood has caused this. How dare you?
I'm sorry, but Stannis had so much potential in the beginning of this. They talked about how great of a leader he was, how he was so good at war. I feel like Davos is just doing everything. Mm-hmm. He's like, Davos, go find the money. Davos, go find the people. Like, Red Woman, take my blood and kill everyone else. Like, what are you doing? Where's your military strategy? Because you really don't seem to be putting on too much effort.
Yeah.
I've been so bored with Stannis' story from day one.
See, I love Davos, though.
He's the only exciting part.
And you need Stannis for Davos.
And he can only learn to read so fast.
Yeah, but he's learning. He's coming to it. He's getting pretty close, and as he's learning how to read and talking about Braavos and Essos, he kind of remembers the Golden Company and
Bank?
The Iron Bank. He's talking about hiring the Golden Company to Stannis, but he remembers the Iron Bank, who we found out a bunch about last episode with Tywin talking about it, and you shouldn't steal from them because they get pretty angry. But wait a second, their ships have a whole lot of gold. But he starts writing a letter to them, and it seems to me that this letter would indicate that he wants to write a letter to them to borrow gold from them.
See, I think that maybe that's the initial request, but we've talked about how much a threat that these people could be to King's Landing, because King's Landing is in so much debt. And I'm thinking maybe there could be some exchange, where it's not quite a loan, but like, okay, you fight them, you win, then... you know, some of this debt will go away.
Oh, I thought he was going to ask them for the money. They were going to send it on a ship, and then he was going to go steal it from the ship.
That could be the case, too. Because, they bring in the smuggler aspect, too.
So many smuggler aspects.
They just
so
keep talking about,
lines.
Yeah, if you're a famous smuggler, you're doing something wrong. So they repeated smuggler, smuggler, smuggler. We know he steals, so that would make the most sense, is if he is asking for money from Stannis. Because he doesn't even want Stannis to know about this. So, and Stannis doesn't need to know about it, especially if the money never gets there, because he's going to steal it off the ship when it's coming to them.
But don't make enemies with Iron Bank. It's just
Don't do it. Don't do it. But hey, I mean, if he's saying it's in the name of the Iron Throne, and right now Stannis doesn't hold the Iron Throne, maybe that's not such a good thing for the Iron Throne. I mean, I don't think they would believe that, though. I'm just throwing that out there. So let's go ahead.
They're definitely going to come into play soon.
So let's go ahead and move over to Essos, where we have Daenerys marching to Meereen. And I got to say, I thought the way they created the city walls were really cool.
It was
a gorgeous city.
It was spectacular. And, like, the scale of it, how large it was compared to, like, the tiny people on top and the height, everything I thought was visually just really appealing.
Yeah, this was probably my favorite part of the episode, actually, was just seeing the fight and...
of the champions.
And Dario actually coming into play and us learning a little bit more about that change of character. And, yeah, I just thought this was fun. It was because an unpredictable part of the show, whereas the rest of the show was kind of like talking heads.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely came out to be like... you know, a ladies' man in this episode while standing up for her. And I felt like on his dagger, there was some sort of figurine on the top before he threw it at the horse.
That he kissed?
Yeah, was it I want to know, someone tell me what the figurine on the top of that knife was. It looked like a woman, but it was a good, quick fight. I thought it proved himself to be a good warrior. I think that when you have champions, sometimes when it's quick, it just proves that they're even better versus drawing it out.
I really like that he said, I come from nothing and I'll return to nothing if I die, because that's actually in Catholicism. That's why we get ashes on our head to remind us that we're dust and dust we shall return. So I thought that was a cool way of putting it in there.
Speaking of Easter. So, yeah, and Dario immediately dodges away from the lance, as he's indicates horses are stupid, but... or he doesn't dodge away, but he kills the horse before it comes.
Right.
Sorry, that was a confusion. And in the whole book thing, he actually dodges away, which was really cool. And it was a different champion, but that champion's not in the show, so it doesn't matter. But Dario throws the knife at the horse and then immediately kills the guy right away.
And he pisses on the ground.
And then pisses on the ground right back at them. Right back at you.
That's the way to assert your manlyhood.
And Daenerys has this great speech for the slaves and... catapults off these barrels containing broken chains, indicating, like, this is what you're going to get, trying to cause
freedom.
A slave revolt.
Inspire freedom.
Right. So, really arousing speech from her.
And, I mean, people tend to follow her, so I'm thinking it will at least spark some slave momentum within the city.
Westeros Charlie thinks Dany should have used her dragons on the Meereenese champion. Would have been much more epic. That would have been pretty funny.
I feel like we are not going to get them until we really, really need them.
Yeah. But I enjoyed... I like these one-on-one battles. Even though this was brief, I think they're really cool. I mean, like, you had the Thenn scene where they were just mass murdering people, but it's more fun when it's...
like a gladiator.
Right, like a gladiator in it. A lot of this, too, this scene was making me think, like, of those gladiator... like, of the movie Gladiator or of... Blood and Sand. What's the name of the show?
Spartacus.
Thank you. Spartacus. It's just like, this is almost like a very quickened Spartacus in a way, with slaves revolting. So it made me think a little bit about that. But yeah, I like that battle. I thought it was a good battle. As brief as it was.
Before we go, because I know we have to wrap up, should I throw out some news and gossip?
Yeah, yes. Let's do some news
and
gossip.
Super quick. I'm going to just like run through this. Basically, Game of Thrones sparking some controversy where, I believe it's a New Jersey college professor was suspended because he posted a picture of his daughter, I believe, wearing a shirt that said, "I will take what is mine with fire and blood," which is a quote from the show, and it's a quote from Daenerys.
Right.
And basically, the school took that quote as a threat.
Oh,
and they thought that fire meant, like, gunfire. So they have suspended this professor without pay for like 8 days. He's saying that he thinks it's actually due to another conflict they were having. They were having some debate, and so they think they were trying to find an excuse. But so
I hope so, because that would be ridiculous.
I guess your Game of Thrones merchandise. I mean, I would wear the T-shirt. But anyway, also in news and gossip, Kit Harington, who for all of you guys, but obviously plays Jon Snow, and Emilia Clarke, the lovely Daenerys, might be having a romance.
What?
Yeah, it's questionable. Supposedly Kit has kind of hinted that he's interested, but Amelia is concerned about their schedules, because although they're on the show together, these are filmed in very different locations.
Right, I was going to say, they would never actually interact with each other.
And she was with Seth MacFarlane.
She was with Seth MacFarlane.
Well, that ended a long time ago, I think.
Well, I don't know, pop culture.
Yeah, they broke up, and now she has Kit kind of being her suitor, as well as her co-star Corey Michael Smith, who was in the Broadway version with her of Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Girl, let me tell you, that relationship was a long time ago.
Well, I'm like, I don't know if I'm like happy about this as a show, like a fan. I'm like, oh, some of my favorite characters getting together, or if I'm one of those people who's like, wait, all these people are going off the market.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I live in LA, Kit, you need to stay single. What's up?
Wonderful.
Back
so
to
I don't know what like.
So
another
thing we should mention.
I'm wondering how fans are going to feel about this.
Another thing we should mention that I didn't know about until recently is so last week in the episode they had Bron training, practicing with Jamie so Jamie mm-hmm. could get better at using the sword. And in the books, it was Ilan Payne who took this role because he has no tongue. So it's like, let's do it with someone who can't tell people about how much I suck fighting with my left hand. But apparently the actor who plays Ilan Payne has cancer, so he's unable to act at the moment. So our best wishes go out to him, and hopefully yeah. everything will get better. But that's actually why he's not in the show. And I don't know if that's why they didn't do it. Who knows if they'd written it that way beforehand anyways, but hopefully everything will be all right for him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Wish him the best.
So let's move on to previews.
I mean, predictions.
Now, predictions. To me, it's a preview because I...
Yeah.
Because I can't say anything. So it's like the previews of next week for me. Predictions. You guys predict things.
I mean, I thought it was interesting that while we saw the glimmer of a White Walker, it seemed like it was very, very quick. So we also kind of got a gasp that sounded to me like Bran's voice. So it sounded like he was in a dream. Maybe he was visited by actually saw a White Walker. And made me think, we still have him going on this quest to see what's beneath this tree. And I'm like, maybe there's an actual good White Walker. I have no idea. I'm totally making this up out of just like, I want there to be some good in the world and them to stand a fighting chance. So that was really what I took away. It was just a brief second, but it caught my attention.
I'm going to predict that Shay is going to show up dead very soon because I just feel like they're going to torture Tyrion this entire season. And he brought her up yet again, reminding the audience that she's still a player in the game.
Maybe she'll save him.
Maybe. I don't. And as far as like Daenerys is going, I feel like we have to have some resistance. Like at this point, like obviously I want Meereen to join with her, but she has been taking all these cities, so I'm going to expect resistance.
And there seemed to be some blood on the walls.
Mm-hmm, a little bit.
And I'm going to predict that we're going to see people at the wall training for a fight.
Through CrossFit.
And we're going to see Cersei wanting Jaime to find Sansa. These were all things in the preview part.
He owes
her.
So once again, guys, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is KLEIN.
I'm Kristen Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape, or you can check out my blog. Go check it out, cinematicescape.com.
Hi, guys. I'm Sarah. You can find me here at Anatomy of a Movie.
All right, guys, thank you so much for joining us this week, and we'll see you next time.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.